This is Bloomberg Daybreak for this Friday, March 3rd, 2017. Coming up this hour,
Janet Yellen takes to the stage in Chicago as Fed Funds futures show 88% odds of a rate hike this month.
Stanley Fisher also set to speak following a week of Fed officials making the case for a March move.
Snap shares surge. The maker of Snapchat gains 44% in its first day of trading.
Attorney General Jeff Sessions may be recusing himself, but a new controversy may be brewing for the Trump administration online. I'm Nathan Hager. Those stories and more coming up.
I'm Rob Bushka. Ahead in sports, the Rangers helped Henrik Lundqvist celebrate his birthday with a win. Islanders came up clutch on the road, and the Jets cut their second superstar in as many days.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1200 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on Bloomberg.com and via the Radio Plus mobile app.
Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Bob Moon.
And it is coming up to 5:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 8 points, Dow futures down 54, NASDAQ futures down 16, the DAX in Germany is down 0.5%, CAC in Paris down 0.25%, and the FTSE 100 down 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan down 0.5%, the Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.7%. 10-year Treasury, little change, yield 2.47%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.30%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.1% or 7 cents to $52.68 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.4% or $5.20 to $12.2770 an ounce. The euro, $1.0516, the yen, 114.27.
This week, we've heard from several Federal Reserve officials calling for a rate hike as early as this month, with the next FOMC meeting scheduled for mid-March. Dallas Fed President Robert Kaplan, San Francisco Chief John Williams, and Board of Governors member Lyle Brainard all took to the stage to strike a hawkish tone.
We should be moving sooner rather than later.
A rate increase is very much on the table.
All told, it will likely be appropriate soon to remove additional accommodation.
As policymakers increased their hawkish rhetoric, Fed funds futures ramped up as well. They ended last week predicting a 40% chance of a March rate hike. That number has now more than doubled to 88% this morning.
And today we'll hear from the two highest-ranking Fed officials. At 1 p.m. Wall Street time, Chair Janet Yellen speaks at the Executives Club of Chicago, and Vice Chair Stanley Fisher is set to deliver remarks at the University of Chicago Booth School of Business. Bloomberg's Michael McKee has a preview.
The question of the day, does the Fed's leadership sign on to the now prevalent view a rate increase is coming next week, or do Janet Yellen and Stanley Fisher push back? Most recent economic data has been steady or stronger than forecast, and over the past few weeks, many Fed policymakers have pointed to a possible March rate rise, most notably Governor Lael Brainard, long considered the most dovish member of the board. But we have yet to see the February payrolls report, and the new administration has offered no details on possible fiscal stimulus, so Yellen in particular may want to offer some caveats to give her colleagues the flexibility to wait if they want without throwing markets into turmoil. Michael McKee, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thanks, Michael. And we'll bring you Chair Yellen's remarks live at 1 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Trading is underway in Europe ahead of Chair Yellen's remarks. For the latest, we bring in Bloomberg Daybreak Europe anchor Neira Tehich live from our London bureau. Good morning, Neira.
Good morning, Bob, Karen. Well, the global rally in equities has pushed European stocks towards their biggest weekly gain of the year. But that rally has taken a bit of a pause today because we're seeing the Stock 600 off by 0.5%, most industry groups down. It's media companies that are underperforming the most, and among them, WPP, down more than 6% at the moment after the world's biggest advertiser projected slower growth and weaker new business. Fresnillo also down more than 4%. It's a precious metals miner and very sensitive actually to what happens in the gold price. And of course, although gold previous to this week had had 4 weeks of gains, it is heading for its worst weekly loss this year. And then on the upside, the best performer on the Stock 600 is Gemalto, up 7.4% at the moment. Full year 2016 operating profit was a beat for this company. Neira Tehich, Bloomberg Daybreak, London.
Thanks, Neira. Trading for the week has wrapped up in Asia. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally reports from our Hong Kong bureau.
Bob and Karen, Asian stocks fell on Friday as investors shunned risk ahead of Janet Yellen's speech in Chicago. The MSCI Asia Pacific Index fell close to 1% to round off its worst week in 2 months. Japanese stocks snapped their recent winning streak as the yen gained against the dollar for the first time this week. The slump in stocks coming despite data showing core inflation in Japan rose by 0.1% in January above estimates. In Seoul, travel-related stocks plunged, setting the Kospi up for its worst session since November. This on reports China had ordered travel agents to stop selling packages to South Korea. Stocks in China continued their decline ahead of the National People's Congress in Beijing, while property stocks dragged the Hang Seng lower in Hong Kong. This on expectations a rate hike in the US could dent property developers' profits. Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Thank you, Juliet. Shares of Snap surged 44% in its stock market debut yesterday, valuing the owner of Snapchat at more than $28 billion. Bloomberg's Sarah Fryer covers the company from our San Francisco bureau.
This is a company that doesn't want to be judged on its user growth, but it's going to be judged on its user growth because that's a metric that slowed in the fourth quarter. And if you don't have the users, you can't make the money off the ads. But Snap's argument is that the user engagement on its app is just so immersive and so frequent that it kind of doesn't matter the quantity so much as the quality.
Those Snap shares closed at $24.48 after debuting at an IPO price of $17, which valued the company at a sales multiple twice that of Facebook.
The Radio Shack electronics brand is racing for another blow as the joint venture between Sprint and former Radio Shack owners prepares to file for bankruptcy. People familiar with the matter say General Wireless Operations may file within the coming days. The company operates Radio Shack outlets within Sprint locations and also franchises the name to other stores. Futures this morning moving lower with S&P futures down 7 points, Dow futures down 50, and NASDAQ futures down 15. The 10-year Treasury is down 1/32nd, the yield 2.48%. And NYMEX crude oil is gaining up 0.2% or 9 cents at $52.71 a barrel. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. That brings us to 5:07 on Wall Street. Recusal and recriminations in Washington. Bloomberg's Nathan Hager with the latest now on an attorney general under political fire.
Good morning, Bob. Well, Attorney General Jeff Sessions has taken some of the political pressure off himself now that he has agreed to recuse himself from investigations into Russian election meddling. But he insists...
The idea that I was part of a, quote, continuing exchange of information during the campaign between Trump surrogates and intermediaries for the Russian government is totally false.
Now, some Democrats had called on Sessions to resign for saying he had no contact with Russians during the campaign. But now Democrat Dianne Feinstein of California says Sessions has taken a good first step.
He moved himself out of the way, and now hopefully an independent investigation can go on with no potential conflict of interest.
But now there may be new controversy for the Trump administration. The Indianapolis Star reports Vice President Mike Pence regularly used a personal AOL email account to conduct official business when he was governor of Indiana.
There's discussions about everything from the security gate at the governor's residence to how the state is responding after a shooting at the Canadian Parliament.
Indy Star reporter Tony Cook broke this story. Now, Hillary Clinton was regularly criticized during the campaign for using a private email server as Secretary of State. A statement from Vice President Pence's office says he did nothing different from past Indiana governors, and any comparison to Clinton is absurd. The fake jobs investigation isn't going away for French presidential candidate François Fillon. The radio channel RTL reports Fillon's spokesman plans to resign today. More from Bloomberg's Greg Viscusi.
Things keep getting worse for François Fillon. A day after he angrily insisted he's staying in the race despite being put under investigation for graft, at least 60 leading members of his party have abandoned his campaign. Fillon is defiantly holding a major rally in Paris this weekend, but his position is looking less and less tenable. Gregory Viscusi, Bloomberg Daybreak, Paris.
The Malaysian police have issued an arrest warrant for another North Korean wanted in the fatal poisoning of leader Kim Jong-un's half-brother. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Bob.
Appreciate it, Nathan. It's now 5:09 on Wall Street, and with your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, good morning to you, Rob Bushka.
Morning, Bob. Boston versus New York. Doesn't matter what the sport, we can all agree it's a great rivalry. The Rangers and Bruins didn't disappoint. An original six matchup in the NHL found the Rangers winning 2-1 in Boston as seldom recognized Pavel Buchnevich and Oscar Lindberg scored both goals. All the scoring came in the third period, as did most of the net mining for Henrik Lundqvist. He tied Grant Fuhr for 10th all-time on the wins list.
I think last couple weeks, obviously, I got an opportunity to look at that list and who's on it. It's a great feeling. But obviously, you realize you've been lucky to be part of a great organization for almost 12 years now. And they've been giving me an opportunity to play a lot of games, a lot of great teammates. So Grant is obviously one of the big ones back in the 80s and 90s. It's just really cool to be out there with him.
Lundqvist notched 32 saves on his 35th birthday. Rangers are in a tie with Pittsburgh for the 3 seed in the East. Islanders, they just refuse to go away.
Islanders 5-1-1 in their last 7 games against the Dallas Stars as Letty for Kulemon scores! Nikolai Kulemon adds to it. 3 goals in the first 9.5 minutes of the third period.
Isles TV on the call. New York wins 5-4 in Dallas. 5 separate Islanders scored, including Andrew Ladd with his 17th. The Isles are tied for the final playoff spot with Toronto. NFL, a day after the Jets released Terrell Revis, they part ways with star wide receiver Brandon Marshall. NBA, things could change for the Warriors. Minus Kevin Durant, they lose in Chicago. The College Hoops, top 25. 22nd-ranked Wisconsin upset at home by Iowa. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Rob, thanks very much. In other sports news, the oldest stadium in major college football is getting a makeover. This weekend, Georgia Tech's campus stadium, originally built in 1913 by members of the student body, will serve as the first home of Atlanta United, one of 2 expansion teams making its debut in Major League Soccer this season. A sellout crowd of 55,000 is expected for Sunday's opener against the New York Red Bulls. Stay with us. This is Bloomberg Daybreak, and you're listening to Bloomberg Radio. Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, managers of New York City cash flow real estate, providing you 12% annualized returns with immediate monthly distributions. See them at nria.net.
Mobile business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. This update's brought to you by SEI. Imagine when investment operations predictively respond to regulatory change. See how SEI's global operating platform can be your catalyst for business transformation at SEIC.com/imagine. European stocks are lower this morning following U.S. and Asian shares, while the dollar is steady after its longest winning streak since May. As Janet Yellen prepared to weigh in on the path for interest rates, we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down about 7 points. Dow futures down 49. NASDAQ futures down 14. DAX in Germany is down 0.4%. 10-year Treasury, that'll change, yield 2.47%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.25% or 12 cents to $52.74 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.5% or $5.70 to $12.27.10 an ounce. The euro, $1.0522. The yen, 114.28. At 10 a.m. Wall Street time, the Institute for Supply Management issues its non-manufacturing index. Economists forecast it was little changed in February. And Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice has more.
In January, 12 of 18 non-manufacturing industries reported growth, though the overall industry edged lower. Economists at Bloomberg Intelligence say there's little reason to believe the trend in services will change anytime soon. Services account for about 90% of the business economy. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Radio.
All right, thanks, Vinny. And Snap up 1.3% in early trading after the shares gained 44% in its stock market debut. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Nathan Hager with more on what's going on around the world. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Karen. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is recusing himself from the Russian election investigation after acknowledging he did meet with Russia's ambassador twice last year. Sessions insists, though, he wasn't lying when he told his confirmation hearing he had no contacts with Russia during the campaign. President Trump's calling the whole controversy a total witch hunt. Russia says its top military officer has spoken with his NATO counterpart for the first time in years. This phone call marks the first contact since NATO suspended dialogue with Russia in 2014
over the annexation of Crimea. In sports, Golden State falls to the Chicago Bulls. Rangers beat the Bruins in the NHL. Caps beat the Devils. Islanders top the Stars. Sharks get past the Canucks. Global news 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Thank you very much, Nathan. Hard as it may be to believe, the odds of an interest rate hike this month are moving rapidly higher, almost as much as the temperature plunged on Wall Street this week. As we've signaled by Fed funds futures, those odds have jumped from 40% at the end of last week to 88% this morning. Our guest this hour is Peter Chapwell, UK-based head of rate strategy for Mizuho International, joining us from London now on the Spectrum Enterprise phone line. Spectrum Enterprise, nationwide fiber-based network and IT infrastructure solutions. Peter Chapwell, good morning and welcome. Has the Fed speak possibly painted the policymakers into a corner? And if so, can Janet Yellen give them some wiggle room with what she has to say today?
Good morning. Very interesting. I think that in some ways, if there is something that the Yellen may want to change, it's the way the market has not just flipped towards pricing a high probability of a hike in March, but also it's now accelerated its degree to which it accepts it expects subsequent hikes. And so the March hike, that seems fine to us. You know, this was actually what we were expecting. As soon as President Trump won the election, we thought, okay, a March hike seems fine. But where we would disagree with current market pricing is that the rest of the strip has accelerated significantly. And we think that the pace of hikes is still going to remain slow. So we're more in the camp of two to three hikes this year, but have to agree that March seems perfectly fine with us.
So given that, investors are really going to be parsing what Yellen has to say today.
I think so. And I think this is where she can refer back to previous speeches and looking at a more cautious pace. And overall, there doesn't appear to be much desire to get too ahead of the curve in the assessment of the impact of Trump's fiscal plan, because we know it's not yet passed through into law. So this is why I think that if Yellen is going to exert any kind of steer on the shift of expectations, then it's going to be towards a more moderate overall path. But I think she'll continue to allow us to expect that March is a live meeting.
You know, not so very long ago, the markets were a bit surly about what the Fed might do and might not do. Are we open now to a lot of volatility and perhaps wild swings if something happens to surprise investors?
Well, I think it is fair. I mean, as we move away from extraordinarily loose monetary policy, we should get more volatility in all asset classes. And the main tool, I think, that could increase this level of volatility is the one which seems to be very well talked about but not very well priced on the US Treasury curve, and that's if the Fed does signal more strongly that they're going to stop reinvesting the principal and coupons of the QE portfolio. That, I think, has the potential to significantly steepen the Treasury curve. And it is really the thing that could make us very bearish on the long end of the Treasury curve. So I think it could actually have the potential to change the way the curve trades. Rather than flattening on monetary policy tightening expectations, you could see the Treasury curve starting to steepen on monetary policy tightening expectations if they bring the stop of the redemptions into play.
Right now, the Treasury seem to be holding tight, the 10-year yield holding at 2.4816. Where would you expect Treasuries to be at the end of summer?
We're expecting them to be approximately at this level. The only thing that would put us expecting them to rise significantly, and I'm referring to our year-end forecasts here, is if they do signal strongly that they're no longer to reinvest their portfolio. That would push our year-end forecast up from 2.6% to 3.10%. So a significant move and a significant steepening of the curve, 530s, something in the ballpark of 35 basis points of steepening of 530s.
Peter Chatwell is UK-based head of rates strategy for Mizuho International. Thank you very much for joining us from London on a Spectrum Enterprise phone line. Spectrum Enterprise, nationwide fiber-based network and IT infrastructure solutions. S&P futures currently down 7 points. That is a little more than 0.25%. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg Radio. And once again, a programming reminder, we will bring you Chair Janet Yellen's remarks today in Chicago live at 1 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Broadcasting live to New York, Bloomberg 1130, to Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 99.1, to Boston, Bloomberg 1200, to San Francisco, Bloomberg 960, to the country, Sirius XM Channel 119, and around the globe, the Bloomberg Radio Plus app and Bloomberg.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning to you. I'm Bob Moon.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Federal Reserve officials have taken to the stage this week to make the case for a March rate hike. Today is Chair Janet Yellen and Vice Chair Stanley Fischer's turn as they make remarks in Chicago. Bloomberg's Kathleen Hayes reports.
Traders have already pushed the chances of a March rate hike to 90%. Yellen could boost that to 100% depending on what she says about the economy and the case for the first rate hike of 2017. Fed Vice Chair Stanley Fischer also speaks within the same hour as Yellen. If the two top Fed officials both signal that a March rate hike may be coming and then fail to deliver, economists say the Fed faces the risk of a major loss of credibility and the risk of a major bout of market volatility. Kathleen Hayes, Bloomberg, New York.
All right, thanks, Kathleen. And we'll bring you Chair Yellen's comments live today on Bloomberg Radio and Television when she speaks at 1 p.m. Wall Street time.
The world's largest advertising company has had a slow start this year and doesn't expect things to get a lot better. That has shares of WPP falling in London by the most in a year. Chairman Martin Sorrell says low inflation, technological disruption, and a greater focus on costs are having an impact on ad spending. WPP expects revenue to grow 2% in 2017. Shares are currently down 6.9% in London.
Euro area output rose to the highest level in almost 6 years in February as growth in the region's top four economies accelerated. A composite purchasing managers index climbed to 56 from 54.4 in January, putting the currency block on track for quarterly growth of 0.6%.
The world's biggest pension fund has posted the biggest quarterly gain in its history. Japan's government pension investment fund returned 8%, or $92 billion in the last 3 months of 2016, increasing assets to $1.2 trillion.
PIMCO Chief Investment Officer Dan Iveson is having a good year. The man who was tapped to replace Bill Gross is attracting billions to his PIMCO Income Fund, which has returned more than 10% in the past 12 months. Having swelled to $75.4 billion in assets, the Income Fund has now overtaken the PIMCO Total Return Fund, which was formerly run by Gross. Futures this morning moving lower. S&P futures are down 6 points. Dow futures down 41. NASDAQ futures down about 12. 10-year Treasury down 2/32. The yield 2.48%. Yield on the 2-year 1.31%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.25% or 13 cents to $52.73 a barrel. And the euro $1.0522. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
Karen, that brings us to 5:33 on Wall Street. The White House spins the Attorney General's undisclosed talks with Russia. The latest on that and more now from Bloomberg's Nathan Hager. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob. Well, he insists he wasn't trying to mislead anyone, but Attorney General Jeff Sessions now says he will recuse himself from the Justice Department's investigation into Russian election meddling. And he is acknowledging, yes, he did meet with Russia's ambassador last year.
Most of these ambassadors are pretty gossipy, and they liked this was in the campaign season. But I don't recall any specific political discussions.
Still, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer is leading the charge, insisting Sessions needs to step down after testifying at his confirmation hearing he had no contacts with Russia.
There cannot be even the scintilla of doubt about the impartiality and fairness of the Attorney General.
The White House is calling this a total witch hunt, but Sessions might not have been the only one with Russia contacts. USA Today reports Trump campaign officials J.D. Gordon and Carter Page spoke with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak during the Republican convention in July. Gordon says it's not unusual for presidential campaigns to interact with diplomats. And an unnamed White House official also confirms to the Associated Press President Trump's son-in-law Jared Kushner met with the ambassador at Trump Tower back in December, along with the man who would become National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, only to resign last month for misleading Vice President Mike Pence about his contacts with the ambassador. The unnamed White House official who confirmed this described the visit with Kushner as a brief courtesy visit. UK Prime Minister Theresa May is visiting Glasgow right now. A sign the battle over a new Scottish independence referendum is kicking up a notch. We get more from Bloomberg's Eddie Buckle.
In a speech to the Scottish Conservative Party, the UK Prime Minister will accuse Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, of tunnel vision and treating politics as a game. Sturgeon edged closer this week to a second independence referendum, saying such a vote might be inevitable as Britain quits the EU. Eddie Buckle, Bloomberg Daybreak, London.
And today, President Trump heads to Orlando, Florida. He'll take a tour of St. Andrew's Catholic School, his first visit to a school as president, a strong indication his education agenda will focus on school choice. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Much obliged, Nathan. Now 5:35 on Wall Street. Your Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Rob Buschka, good morning to you.
Good morning, Bob. What's better than an original six matchup with the Bruins and Rangers? How about a 2-1 New York win on Henrik Lundqvist's 35th birthday? An unusual cast of offense for New York.
Stanley Cup banner for that. Here's Nash whipping it high. It'll bounce to Holden. Across it goes. A wind-up score! What a blast! And the Rangers strike first. It's Pavel Buchnevich.
Rangers TV's Oscar Lindberg also scored a goal, his fifth. Rangers are third in the East, tied with Pittsburgh. Islanders continue to impress under new coach Doug Weight. They won 5-4 in Dallas to keep their hopes alive. Weight on the Isles' patience.
We just got to play the same way. You know, it's a learned habit, and I think we've been pretty good at it as of late in the last month, 6 weeks, but it wasn't a great example today. And we didn't give up a lot in the third. It's just we got to play with a little more poise and then a little better decisions. And then when it comes to the last 3-4 minutes, we got to play with a little more desperation. That's when you got to start taking icing. If you got to take an icing, we made some soft plays and kind of let them back into the game, but big win.
New York is tied for the eighth and final playoff spot with Toronto. NBA, the Warriors without Kevin Durant lose in Chicago. First time this year they've lost back-to-back games. And college hoops, one top 25 upset. Number 22, Wisconsin, beaten at home by Iowa. NFL news, as the combines begin this weekend in Indianapolis, a day after the Jets cut Darrell Revis, they drop another superstar from the roster, wide receiver and Pro Bowler Brandon Marshall. 33 years young, they said he doesn't fit in quite with their new youth movement. That's your NBC Bloomberg Sports Update. Bob?
Thank you, Rob Buschka. Now 5:37 on Wall Street. That is time for your Tri-State Business Report and our Friday check-in this morning with Bloomberg's John Tucker.
Yes, happy Friday, Bob. In another effort to cut costs, Goldman Sachs wants employees to dump their BlackBerries for personal smartphones. According to an internal memo seen by Bloomberg, the policy sets reimbursement caps for data and calls, but allows business travelers to itemize bills for payment of international data, roaming, and Wi-Fi. It also allows employees to keep their work phones if they need recorded lines. U.S. prosecutors say a former chairman of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey deserves 2 years in prison. David Sampson urged the judge to spare him a prison when he sentenced Monday for pressuring United Airlines to fly a money-losing route convenient to his family's weekend home in South Carolina. Apple executive Eddie Q had meetings last week with Paramount Pictures and Sony's TV and film units. The New York Post reports one of the officials Q met with was left with the impression Apple is looking for a major acquisition and not just a deal for television shows. And that's the Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm John Tucker. Bob, back to you.
John, thanks very much. Shares of Costco fell 4.3% in late trading after the company posted disappointing quarterly earnings. Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett with the story.
It's a sign its warehouse club model may be less durable than expected in a shaky retail economy. The results coming from a company that is widely seen as a retail bright spot renew concerns about the industry. Best Buy and Target both gave pessimistic outlooks earlier this week, dragging down shares of the big box retailers. A membership fee increase also failed to placate investors. The company plans to boost its rates by $5 this year, a move that should help fuel sales and earnings. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Charlie. It's a milestone for Spotify. The world's largest paid music streaming service has surpassed 50 million subscribers. That's more than twice as many as the industry's number two player, Apple. Spotify is still losing money, though. Investors are expecting the Swedish company to file for an IPO. Caterpillar has gone from presidential favorite to the target of a federal raid all in the course of a week. Government agents have raided the company's headquarters in Peoria, Illinois. They were after evidence related to exports and a Swiss subsidiary as part of a criminal investigation. Now let's check in with our Bloomberg affiliate radio stations to find out what commuters are hearing all about all around the world this morning.
I'm Gina Cervetti, and for WBBM in Chicago, I'm reporting that the joint venture between Sprint and former Radio Shack owners is preparing to file for bankruptcy.
I'm John Tucker for WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting on safety rules for the auto industry that may never get out of the gate.
I'm Caroline Hepke on Bloomberg DAB, digital radio in London. We're following Theresa May's visit to Scotland as the Prime Minister seeks to stave off a second Scottish independence referendum.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHA. Yes, in Louisville, Kroger drops in trading yesterday after saying the grocery price war isn't going away anytime soon.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on Goldman Sachs employees complaining they're getting nickeled and dimed on their smartphone plans.
Thank you all, and those are just some of the stories Bloomberg is reporting across the globe this morning. S&P futures down 6 points at this hour. That is 0.25%. This is Bloomberg. Coming up, we'll take a look at the first parliamentary defeat for UK Prime Minister Theresa May's bill to trigger Brexit. June Grosso and Michael Best will cover it for us in the Bloomberg Law segment, straight ahead here on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global business news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Radio Plus mobile app, and on your radio. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European stocks are following U.S. and Asian shares lower, while the dollar is pretty steady after its longest winning streak since May. As Janet Yellen prepared to weigh in on the path for interest rates, we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 4.5 points now. Dow futures down 25. NASDAQ futures down 10. The DAX in Germany is down 0.2%, while the CAC in Paris is now up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 0.32, yield 2.48%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 20 cents to $52.82 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $3.90 to $12.29 an ounce. The euro now at $1.0538 and the yen 114.38. A private reading of China's services sector edging lower in February. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis reports from our Hong Kong bureau.
The Caixin Services PMI weakened to 52.6 from 53.1 in January. That's a four-month low, but the trend is still seen as firm. New orders rose on improved demand, but input prices fell versus the prior month. Now, Caixin also releases a composite index, which covers both manufacturing and services. That series rebounded to 52.6 in February from 52.2 the previous month. Taken together, growth is solid, but companies are not finding it easy to raise prices. Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak, Hong Kong.
Thanks, Brian. And Snap up 2.1% after gaining 44% in its stock market debut. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Nathan Hager with more on what's going on around the world. Nathan.
Karen, some of the political pressure may be off Attorney General Jeff Sessions now that he has agreed to recuse himself from the Russian election meddling investigation. Some Democrats still insist he should resign for testifying he had no contacts with Russia during the campaign, but President Trump says he has total confidence in his attorney general. There could be new political pressure, though. The Indianapolis Star is reporting Vice President Mike Pence used an AOL email account to conduct official business when he was governor of Indiana. Republicans accused Hillary Clinton of breaking the law for using a private email server as Secretary of State. Pence's office says none of his emails were classified. In sports, Golden State falls to the Chicago Bulls. In the NHL, Rangers beat the Bruins in an original six matchup. Caps beat the Devils. Islanders topped the Sharks.
Stars, the Sharks, actually won. They beat the Canucks. Global News, 24 hours a day, powered by more than 2,600 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Nathan Hager. This is Bloomberg. Bob?
Thank you, sir. Now it's time to check in with Bloomberg Gadfly. Gadfly is Bloomberg's global platform for fast commentary and instant analysis about pivotal financial markets and corporate news. We're joined live now by Edward Evans, Bloomberg Gadfly editor in our London bureau. Good morning, Edward. And what's got the buyout industry salivating? Some tasty deals, perhaps?
Well, very much the taste of them. Kraft Heinz, obviously its failed tilt at Unilever, creates an opportunity that the buyout industry has been salivating over for years. Call it the sausage roll-up. Consumer giants are finally willing to ditch underperforming assets, and the time may have come to start combining some of these into a sizable leverage buyout. Look at Europe's consumer goods companies, and they're stuffed with underperforming businesses that could benefit from aggressive management. So far, CEOs have been actually reluctant to let new owners have a go. After Unilever, that's now changing. Unilever, of course, is reviewing its entire portfolio, suggesting pieces might start to come onto the market. The spreads business, which has an estimated enterprise value of 6 billion euros, is the standout disposal candidate. Look at Nestlé. It sounded pretty relaxed about its US frozen food and confectionery businesses, even though they're among the group's slowest growing divisions. Recent events should focus the mind of Ulf-Marc Schneider, Nestlé's CEO. Those assets could be worth up to 19 billion euros. Then there's Reckitt Benckiser. Obviously, last month's $70 billion deal for baby food formula group Mead Johnson increases its complexity and indebtedness, so disposals would make sense. Add them all up, and it's nearly 50 billion euros of potential targets. They may lack growth, but they offer stable cash flows and scope for improvement, prime areas for private equity firms. Margin gains could come from cost cutting and economies of scale. So what's been keeping private equity waiting? The main obstacle appears to be management. Financiers who like the idea of this roll-up say it's hard to assemble teams with the expertise to lead a series of deals and extract the synergies. If the right people could get their act together, they could really bring home some bacon here.
Interesting. In the immortal words of the pop group LFO, I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. That is so 1999, which is about the time that I started noticing if your apparel store makes it into a pop song, might be peaking. And sure enough, the following year in 2000, they went for trendier with Hollister. And Gadfly sees some dollar signs?
Yes. The last thing America needs right now is another mall-based retail chain that caters to fickle teenagers. Maybe, though, investors should make an exception for Abercrombie & Fitch's trendier Hollister brand. Obviously, the surfer-style teen shop reported year-over-year sales growth for the second quarter in a row on Thursday, and that helped send Abercrombie's shares up as much as 15%. They also stood in stark contrast with Abercrombie's traditional brand, where sales fell 13% from a year ago. Now, this brings up an interesting idea. Maybe it's time to spin off Hollister, which seems to resonate much more with younger teenagers looking for lower price points than its parent company does anymore. Over the years, Hollister's become a much larger part of Abercrombie's business. It now brings in 57% of annual revenue, up from 29% in 2005. Abercrombie doesn't break out what portion of its profits come from Hollister, but Hollister likely has lower margins because prices on its T-shirts and jeans can be about a fifth lower than Abercrombie's. We don't know how much of Abercrombie's online sales come from Hollister either, but it's safe to assume it's a large portion, as system-wide sales are much higher for Hollister than for Abercrombie. Hollister's also got a successfully loyalty program with 5 million members. The styles resonate with younger consumers, something that's not happening at Abercrombie. If Hollister left Abercrombie with most of the combined company's debt, it would be a retail brand with a clean balance sheet that's actually growing sales. Now, that would be a rarity in today's retail world.
Something to think about. Edward Evans in London, thanks. You can read more fast commentary and instant analysis at Bloomberg.com/gadfly or by typing GADFGO on the Bloomberg.
Now it's time for our daily Bloomberg Law Brief, exploring legal issues in the news. And the Law Brief is brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Today, Bloomberg Law hosts June Grasso and Michael Best discuss the first parliamentary defeat for UK Prime Minister Theresa May's bill to trigger Brexit. They speak with Stephen Pearce, a professor at the University of Essex School of Law, and Catherine Barnard, a professor at the University of Cambridge School of Law.
Catherine, what is the significance of the vote by the House of Lords on this bill?
It's significant
significant because there was an important judgment of our Supreme Court in January saying that there needed to be an Act of Parliament to trigger the Article 50 process. That's the process that will take the UK out of the European Union. And the bill went through the House of Commons very easily. There was a number of amendments proposed, but they were all rejected. And now the House of Lords are scrutinising it, and they've raised concerns about a number of issues, but particularly about protecting the rights of EU nationals who are already here. And actually, there's quite a lot of cross-party support for giving rights to EU nationals. But the question is how and when, and the big question is, should it be done in advance of Article 50 being triggered, or should it be part of the Brexit negotiations? Because Theresa May says, we don't want to give entitlements to EU nationals in the United Kingdom now, because we want to secure the position of British nationals living in the EU. And this has led to complaints that EU nationals in the UK are being used as bargaining chips, and they say this is not fair.
Stephen, the House of Commons will be debating the amended bill, where May's Conservative Party has a slender majority. Is the vote likely to go along party lines?
Well, it did when the House of Commons first looked at this bill. There were only a few Conservative MPs who switched and voted with the opposition, and there were actually one or two Labour MPs who switched and voted with the Conservatives. And then there were people like Sinn Féin from Northern Ireland who don't take their seats. So unless about 10 Conservatives switch, or something like that, because they also have Ulster Unionists on their side, so 10, 15 Conservatives would have to switch in order to defeat the government. And that may be probably politically unrealistic, but we'll see.
That's Stephen Pearce, a professor at the University of Essex School of Law, and Catherine Barnard, a professor at the University of Cambridge School of Law, speaking with Bloomberg Law host Jim Grasso and Michael Best. You can listen to Bloomberg Law weekdays at 1 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio.
And that's this morning's Bloomberg Law Brief. You can find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com and BloombergBNA.com for more information.
Futures this morning lower. S&P futures down 4 points. Dow futures down 14. And NASDAQ futures are down 9. 10-year Treasury down 4/32, yield 2.49%. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. This is Bloomberg.
This is the Bloomberg BNA Report, legal, tax, and compliance information from the Bloomberg 99.1 Newsroom in Washington. Here's Steve Podisk.
Oil and gas companies no longer need to give the EPA data on methane leaks. Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt acted after former allies in oil and gas states requested the change. House Ways and Means Chair Texas Republican Kevin Brady says the committee isn't ready to mark up an Affordable Care Act repeal bill because the budget impact is still being calculated. And industry and safety groups warn President Trump's order on cutting regulations before adding new ones could hurt safety rules for the auto, aviation, and rail industries.
Bloomberg BNA, the leader in providing news, analysis, and proprietary business data that positions legal professionals to best advise their clients. This is Bloomberg.